good? Okay, I just wanted to double check. All right, open up, call the Development Engineering Advisory Board meeting for Thursday, April 13th to order. Introductions, Greg, you want to start?
Greg Schaefer, Development Engineering Manager.
Christine Holman, my introduce.
Eric Lino, Mark Peter,
Mike Ogren, Olson, Engineering.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramos.
Don Hardy with Fort Rainbow.
Marty Snow, Clark County.
Jeff Riston with Moss Riston and Kingston Homes.
Can we just do the other?
Oh, yes, sorry. You want to introduce yourself? You don't have to either.
Michael Rula, the Public Works.
Susan Wilson, Public Works.
Thank you.
If we could just ask, if you hadn't had the opportunity to sign in, it would sure help Chrissy as she takes a minute and notes our attendance to those. So we've got two signups.
Okay, so this meeting is a recorded meeting, and the audio will be posted on DEEB's website. Review and adoption of minutes. Everyone had a chance to take a look at the minutes? Order.
I review and move for adoption.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. DEEB's annual report and work plan follow-up. Want to talk about how it went?
I put that in there, Jeff.
Yeah,
I just wanted to start out with thank you. Thank you to Jeff and Don, who headed up a team effort as we typically do, both to report the last year's annual report and to foreshadow the 2017-2018. I thought it went very, very well. And also compliments to the DEEB members. I think we had a very, very strong attendance there. Having said that, there were, as I took notes, I was finding quite a number of procedural type items that I thought, you know, to kind of be proactive on this, should we just assemble a group together, I think largely get the county staff together that would assist DEEB with those respective procedural type, you know, concerns that we've got, and then any members from DEEB that would like to attend, you know, maybe work that offline and then bring it in here sort of thing, as opposed to, seems like often, that we'll bring an issue here, we'll bring staff relative to that, but we kind of work it month by month. And I think quite a few of these just seem like maybe we didn't need to go to that extent. If we just huddled internal staff and brought some DEEB members in, maybe we could just kind of tick through those that are more, you know, procedural related, not quite so policy driven, and you know, keep those moving along in a faster way.
Great. That is something that the new project delivery stakeholders.
That's what I'm going to ask.
Okay.
There's going to be some overlap with what we do here and what that group will be doing. Although that group's going to be kind of split up now, looking at an interleaves items and then a bigger picture, economic development picture. More directly from the board.
Okay.
There is some similarities to what we'll be looking at there and what DEEB is looking at here. I don't think it's necessarily going to be, we're not going to duplicate efforts necessarily, but if there are certain things, specific things that you identified during that meeting with the board, it might be good to let us kind of just send out both.
I didn't take any notes.
Sure. Yeah, I was going to ask. We can certainly take that up then.
Okay.
I'm sure anything that is decided in that group, which is has a very short duration, maybe a few months, would come back to DEEB proper.
Great.
Ott and I and Jamie both are on that group, and Marty.
That group is a short duration? It's a short, do you say it's a short duration?
I don't know, a few months. A few months would be
that's up, yeah.
Aggressive. It's not a standing committee. It'll hopefully, we'll be able to wrap some things up, maybe take a summer break, and if there are some larger policy questions, it will be probably taken up after some short break during the summer.
Were these things that came up during the discussion, or were they actually on our work plan?
I think both.
Were they both?
You know, as I kind of look at it, and I think primarily, do we have some low-hanging fruit here that maybe we could get a subcommittee together and tick those off, you know, and come back to Deve and say, guess what, we can check, you know, 1 through 6 off of here sort of thing, if it's kind of low-hanging fruit and
I think that's
primarily procedurally driven, so.
Why don't you send
I will. I think it's a great
suggestion. Maybe we'll talk internally and see what venue is the best to take those off.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's a...
We'll do that.
That's a, it's getting ahead, because a lot of times we'll look at it on the agenda and we'll decide this needs to be done, dealt with by a smaller group anyway, so.
If it is
proactive,
it might be that project delivery stakeholder group is that, maybe that group to undertake.
Okay.
Maybe. As long as you move fast enough.
Good.
Right. Which 3 months, that works for me. All right.
Pull that together and get it out before our next meeting.
That'd be great. And I appreciate staff's help and you know, all of staff. Staff's been great working with Deve, and hopefully we expressed that. I can't remember. I think we did, but.
And I'd just like to say, for the record, I mentioned this after the meeting, but I think you did a great job.
Thank you.
Representing you, answering the questions, but, you know, getting expertise from other members of the necessary. Yeah. Marty,
I appreciate that. Thank you, Mike. Okay, so we'll wait and hear back from you, Greg, on that.
Right.
That'd be terrific. Review of upcoming events.
Upcoming events. So that's on the back sheet of your agenda today. And with the Board of County Councilors, work sessions and hearings, typical time of their meeting every Wednesday. Those can start as early as 9 a.m. You'll want to check the councilor's grid for specific work sessions and times for that. And then likewise on the hearings every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with the exception of the first Tuesday of the month is typically an evening session at 6 o'clock. Specific scheduled hearings or work sessions, we have it's ours. There is a development agreement, Hidden Crest Development, and also Parker's Abbey. That will be this Tuesday, April 18th, 10 a.m.
What's
that?
This
don't point to me, it's somebody else.
No, I was pointing to Steve. That's not yours?
We have the Hidden Crest one. I'm not sure what Parker's Avenue one is on.
Yeah. Both of these are developments related specifically to developer agreements that we've got.
Is it like Traction Pond?
That's the bonding.
That's the Hidden Crest is the bonding. I don't know if Parker's Abbey's trying to do the same thing.
No, they're not.
Okay.
Different components of the development.
Yeah.
Let's see here, Wednesday, April 19th, 9:15 a.m., we've got Clean Water Funding, Leichner Landfill, Annual Budget Procedure, and CREDC's Land for Jobs Presentation. And then finally in April, on the 26th, 10:30, a work session on the 2017 Spring Supplemental. For Planning Commission work sessions and hearings, we have an Open Public Meetings Act and Public Records Thursday, April 10th, 5:30. And then finally, Open Public Meetings Act and Public Records Shoreline Master Plan Program Thursday, April 20th, 6:30.
Any idea what the Shoreline Master Program is about? Anybody?
I do not know.
Who
should? Me either. Okay.
Real quick, if I can take a minute on the spring supplemental, that's the budget that the board looks at for adoption in May. I will be asking for more positions in the spring supplemental in the permit center and plan review. I think we also have a position in land use review. So.
And we have a position in development engineering, actually two, a new review engineer, and then to convert a project employee to a permanent FTE on the admin side.
Are these funded positions? I mean, are they?
That's what they're asking.
Or you'd have to wait till
minor. I would characterize as revenue positions, so long as we have workload and revenue coming in to pay for those positions.
Okay.
They're that.
Yeah.
Same with us.
No, that's good. We there was a discussion the other day with builders or whatever the concern that staff needed to be brought up, and they were talking about there's sometimes difficult for you guys to hire staff. Almost like retroactive to the budget or something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but.
So we're moving on that.
Okay, great. Do you know what the shoreline?
I do not know.
I just found out.
You did?
It's to amend
comply with ADA requirements for existing docks and to do a
floating on a lot of residences
floating around.
Public docks and
ADA compliance for public docks and existing on water residents to comply with state law.
No. Limited amendments then, really.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Deed member announcements.
Only just to say that Mike and I attended the policy stakeholder group.
Project Delivery Stakeholder Group.
That's where I got policy from, by the
Project
way.
Project Delivery Stakeholder Group.
Meeting on Tuesday, it was our second meeting. For the most part, I think a pretty productive discussion. Two of the counselors weighed in quite a bit, I would say, as to their thought processes. And as was alluded to earlier, I think that the group's gonna maybe split into some groups, with one coming at it from a very in-the-weeds technical aspect, and one at a much, much higher level. And hopefully they'll be able to come together with sort of a seamless package of recommendations that for the board to consider.
Good. That sounds great. We don't have a whole lot of, I don't know who we're missing, or just, I guess maybe partly because the tables are a bit larger, but it feels like we're empty, but this real...
We got Marty here. Yeah.
If I'm a deep man, I don't know if I'm a deep
man. Yeah, okay, we'll make you.
Ex officio.
I think so.
The, go ahead.
I do have a couple things.
Yeah, go ahead.
The counselors have been briefed on how many projects we have in the pipeline that have received fee waiver approvals. We split the data into two categories: tenant improvements, which number 300, 320, call it, and those are on existing buildings. So that the impact, so to speak, on fee revenue and impact fees is not all that significant, and they're pretty well defined. You're building out you've got a shell, you've had five tenant improvements, and you're on the, you need six and seven. Fairly easy, straightforward. The other projects are new construction from pre-app to final. There are 160 projects in that universe. And what I've mentioned to the counselors, and thank you, Councilor Olson, for showing up right on time. There are about 80 projects that are at preliminary, or at pre-app or preliminary. So kind of put some ideas around what to do. They've asked for some data around the projects, and it's hard to get an estimate on what the fees could be, would be. So we're going to kind of put together a high, medium, low scenario of estimates. Like at pre-app, you don't know what the grading quantities are going to be, so we don't know the engineering fees. But we do know that it's a site plan review for 30,000 square feet of office, and we might know something about that. I've proposed some talking points. I want to see a resolution in front of the board in June so that they can make whatever decision they make effective July 1. If they ramp down waiving impact fees, we have a year and a half to do so. If they say January 1, 2019, which is the start of a new budget for us, we're done. So just some high-level thoughts. I just sent something to Mr. McCauley about a work session, maybe May 17th, where we have enough time to do some one-on-ones with the counselors, hold the work session, get some direction, get something in draft form, and a resolution, maybe come to Deeb in June with, hey, here's kind of what the thinking is. And we could, then we still have enough time to actually have a hearing on a resolution in June. 17th, 24th, I think those are the dates that I kind of picked up. So that's one announcement. Second one is parallel in time with a spring supplemental, I'm going to be asking for an additional FTE in wetland and habitat review group. And with that, there's some fee changes that we need to make, kind of like what we did with land use review, which is to kind of right-size the fees. I think we have some fees on entry and minor that are not quite right-sized, and we have some fees that are larger projects that are undervalued, under-costed. So we're trying to come up with what is the right costing for these small barrier to entry, minor fees, minor permits, major permits. And Brent's group is, you know, two, and we've got a lot of work.
Yeah.
And we do not fully staff the permit center with our wetland and habitat group because we don't have the number of bodies we do have in other areas. So we staff at 21 hours out of 40. So that's something I need to bring to the council, kind of parallel in time, because there was more work to it than the spring supplemental, because we're also cleaning up the budget that we inherited last year from a dissolved department. So
right.
Those are two things I wanted to keep you all apprised of.
Regarding number two, is this kind of breaking it up further from a type one, type two, to now taking a look at the magnitude of, say, some of these type two habitat wetland permits to
minor, major, yeah, and the way Brent explained to me the fees as they are today and proposed is you only pay for what you get. So if you have a predetermination and that predetermination results in no further work needed, you're not going to pay that fee. So they are cumulative, but we seem to undercost the major wetland and habitat permits almost to the cost of under or over costing the minor and the lesser. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then when you look at, we have comparisons with other GMA counties in Western Washington. That's the only comparison we can make because the cities don't have the same level of work that we have. So when we look at up and down the I-5 corridor, starting in Pierce, King, Snohomish, Kitsap, Whatcom, the fees, we look at a low end and a high end, and a lot of them were on the lower end as proposed or maybe in the middle. So that's something that I'll bring forward to the council, and if it works out well enough, I can probably bring something to the DEEB in May. What is it now, April? May?
You want to come in May?
If I get the head nod from the councilors that yes, we should be doing
I'll
this.
I'll check back with you to see if May looks better or June. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, June might be too late.
Yeah, but
if we're...
going to hearing in June.
Well, June would be the resolution on the fee waiver.
Okay.
That might be a little ambitious.
What's that?
It just might get a little more in-depth.
Oh, that's right. That's the resolution. That's the fee waiver resolution.
Sure.
I don't want to be arbitrary.
Well, that's what we have. We have time, so.
Some fee waiver money.
Yes.
You include an analysis of the number of jobs that were assigned to each application.
I think those were part of the application form.
That's a self-report.
Yes.
Right? Do we have the capacity, do the county have the capacity to follow up and do kind of a check on that?
The short answer is no.
It could be that it had to be annual.
Yes. And then we can get some data, but it's all aggregated by the State Department of Employment Security. They can't disclose necessarily without some, I think we have to have some confidential agreement when you get down to a certain storefront.
It almost seems mandatory to know what the county's paying. Is it paying off? You gotta know that number.
Well, there are projects that, you know, I think on the face of it, you know that they're not yielding a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just
right.
For the council,
or they are yielding a lot of jobs.
Decision, an informed, accurate
yes.
decision, logical process, that would be a key metric. So I know you all know that.
Yeah. I'm being bold, and Councillor Olson can soften my edge here. It's just like, you know, I earlier on with the council, I said for a talking point and a recommendation, let's close this entire thing out January 1, 2019. It would be nice to track any of the impacts against the current budget that we have, which is still 20 months long. I mean, we have a two-year budget. So if we looked at starting the council saying, this is the direction we're taking between now and the end of this budget, two-year budget, and we start July 1, it's like, well, July 1 to the end of the year is 6 months, and then 18 will be the first 6 months, second 6 months. And it's just like graduated, we waive X, Y, Z, and after 19, everybody's paying all the fees. That's just a straw man that I threw out there.
And this is, I would assume, in response to the fact that some of these projects could roll on if they're phased in perpetuity.
We have projects from 2008.
Right.
And they didn't make a go of it between 2008 and the end of 2016.
Right.
And the idea of the whole program was to incent development, job producing development. So
just another question. What is the deficiency? The deficiency would be good to know as well in terms of the transportation network system itself.
Yeah.
That's another element about what's being given up.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's a big issue. I mean,
traffic impact fees are a
yeah, I mean, it's
more pain for Heath than it is for me. To be honest,
yeah.
There's more of an impact on the public works side and the road fund side than there is on the 1011 side, although we've been waiving a significant amount of fees because some of the projects are big.
Mm-hmm. Depending on the 6 months, 6 months, one thing, but for me it depends on where the project is also. So some of these ones look like just placeholders,
yeah.
And they, you know, they're last minute thrown in there, then I think that maybe those we look at in a particular way. Those who are already in the process in a different place, maybe we look at those differently. So that's kind of,
yeah.
Without regard to the state, a big broad brush for everybody, kind of look at where the projects are in the process.
Well, some of the data that we will share with the councilors on all these projects is, you know, there might be a cutoff. Like, you know, the last activity was in 2015. We saw nothing in 16 until the very tail end, right? And you see the original application was in like 2008 or 9, and you're asking the question, so what else, what other incentives can we offer for this project to actually get off the ground? Other than the county going out and building it, I don't know. So it's a great discussion that we had yesterday, and I suspect good discussions one-on-ones and then a work session. So fortunately, we have 5 weeks to get to a work session. That's I threw a date out there
but
for Mark.
I'm on that week, so we can have
okay.
That week in May, I'm on.
The 10th, so May 10th. It's still 4 weeks out. Yeah. Yeah.
On the second part, I just wanted to really thank the county. The shoreline program, the exemption program, is working.
Good.
We just had a project we just submitted, and it went very smoothly.
Good.
So thank you.
Now I got one and two. We'll remain to be seen.
Yeah.
So
far, so good. Yeah. We've had a really good experience. I mean, that
excellent.
Great.
Good to hear.
Okay. That's good news. Let's move on to the TIP evaluation system then. Hopefully Dean can stick around so we can talk about the PD non-formal state. I'll do it again. How are you doing?
Susan Wilson for the first of all, I want to thank you for inviting us to come speak to your meeting. I really do appreciate it. One thing that we're doing this year is we are updating the Clark County 2018-23 Transportation Improvement Program. And through this process, we are updating the evaluation system, how we rank on projects. So, and what we'd like from you guys is we want suggestions, or we want to validate some of our recommendations for the reasons. So we're going to remind you of the guiding principles and the legalities of the program, talk about the goals of the evaluation system, the details of the ranking criteria, and we want to do this before we go to our county councilors for adoption, which will be before the budget is adopted in probably November.
Have you been to PC?
We're going next month.
Okay.
So we're going to the Planning Commission, MAC, Regional Transportation Advisory Council, or committee, and those four who we're going to present to. We've also met with other stakeholders, such as the Columbia River Economic Development Council, for some of our detail of our ranking. So really, the guiding principles set by our Board of County Councils members and our county engineer is we have to pay our debt service. That's the first thing we have to do. Safety issues, we have to address our safety issues. There's a lot of liabilities that can happen in our county. We have to preserve what we have. Preservation, our assets, culverts, bridges, that kind of stuff. And then what's left over is what's spent on our capital projects through the capital facility plan through the conference. So the TIF is a state-mandated program. There's a couple of things that must happen with our transportation improvement program. All of our capital road projects must be in our annual construction program and our transportation improvement program. The annual construction program is the first year of the TIF. Also, we have to have a prioritized list for programs. We have to build within the capital facilities plan, and we have to evaluate those projects. The TIF has to be adopted before the budget is adopted. That is a requirement, RCW. And then we have to follow the policies of the comprehensive plan via the capital facilities plan. Before our evaluation system, we have three categories, and within those three categories, we have nine classifications. So first of all, we look at safety, about 33% of the evaluation. And then we also look at economic development, and then mobility. And this leads to other arterials and collector routes, multimodal, pedestrian, bike, and bus access for concurrency. And then about 14% of the evaluation, we looked at environmental impacts. You know, the road next to a Category 1 wetland, that's a major impact, a major cost to a project. We also look at public and outside agency support. Is there potential for, you know, grant funds, does RTC support the project, for example? And then leveraging of outside funding, that comes with our federal grants, our state grants, potential partnerships. About 30% of our program is grant funded. So also the evaluation system must stay consistent with our funding partners to get these projects funded. So we're always keeping that in mind. So now I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Michael, who's going to talk about the details of the ranking.
Thank you, Susan. So as Susan mentioned, we need to prioritize and rank projects to ensure that the most beneficial projects come to the top of our construction list. And here you see a summary of the nine different criteria that we take a look at to try and make that determination. Things like safety, how does the current road compare to what it's supposed to be in the arterial atlas, what else is connected, and a variety of other factors. We try and be very objective and data-based with our criteria to take subjectivity out of it. and it's based on a 100-point scale. So, quickly stepping through. So, taking a closer look at a few of the criteria and stepping through them pretty quickly. Safety is one of the criteria that received quite a remodeling for the proposed 2018 TILT. We do take a look at crash history, but we're also now attempting to use current industry best practices and following the guidance of the DOT and Federal Highway Administration's Highway Safety Manual, which attempts to not only look at what did happen, but what can be done to mitigate the crashes and accidents that occur. We also take a look at the physical aspects of the roadway and how that increases or decreases the risk. Things like the width of the shoulder, is there a big roadside drop-off, are there lots of sight distance issues. And the 30 points for safety is the biggest, I believe, point value in the TIP, which again dovetails into the Board of Counselors' priorities that they have set down for us. Economic development is the second highest point category in the TIP in recognition of its importance to county counselors' job growth desires and to the county as a whole. We evaluate jobs in this category based on the vacant buildable lands model, or VBLM, that you've probably heard of in conversations with the GMA. Points are assigned to industrial and commercial jobs based on a sliding scale. We use the same 9 jobs per buildable acre for industrial jobs and 20 jobs per acre for commercial, again, to be consistent with the BBLM and the Capital Facilities Plan. We rank the jobs basically, or we rank the projects in terms of the number of jobs that are created, and then basically assign point values you see here. The second part of economic development, once we take a look at the jobs that are created, is what other factors might make a particular project attractive to developers. The Columbia River Economic Development Council was very helpful with this. They actually suggested the 3 items you see that are proposed for addition to our ranking plan. Is it within a focused public investment area? I believe that's a Board of Counselors designation. Is it a development-ready site that could quickly turn into jobs? And is it nice and close to a highway interchange for the movement of products? Another factor that we look at is the comparison to the County Arterial Atlas. How does the current road compare to the ultimate fully built-out roadway specified in the Arterial Atlas? If the new roadway requires any of the features that you see on the slide, then we award points because the new project would be fulfilling the goals of the Arterial Atlas. Concurrency is another legally required planning process that we try and integrate into the TIP to ensure roads are built and ready by the time of development and their increased traffic makes them needed. We tweaked a few things in this category for 2018. We are looking at level of service for intersections. Is the intersection currently failing in level of service terms? Is it close to failing in order to get points? When it comes to corridors, the concurrency experts of the county have recently advised us that a volume to capacity ratio is a much more appropriate measure. So we're taking the same failing, meaning 10% of failing that we always have used, but we're applying a different, more modern, and more appropriate, in the words of the experts, methodology to determining that fact.
Just one question.
Sure.
What's the intersection of regional significance definition? If that were two arterials,
A intersection of regional significance, a very good question, is defined as an intersection where at least three of the four legs are classified as arterials or collectors. That's out of Clark County Code Section 40. That's a good question. I had to look that one up myself because I was curious how we determined that, and it's actually spelled out in the code. Any other questions on anything we've covered today as we move through this smartly?
What is BV under?
Vacant buildable land plot. That is the planning toolkit, for lack of a better word, Mr. Gaither, that is used for the capital facilities plan and the growth management act and plans.
Mr. Gaither.
Oh, I could. Yeah, he likes that.
No, you're not talking. Okay.
We'll just call you Mr. Gaither, but I like that. It's appropriate.
I thought your dad just walked in.
Thanks for explaining that.
Sure.
So the vacant buildable land model is it's about the wild counts. So we have to consist of what our counts are.
Yeah. I think the vacant buildable lands model is one of the inputs to the it's one of the inputs into the slide.
Marty's sitting right over there.
Get
answer these questions.
Marty, what's it
anybody
do?
That's a GIS thing. I had to explain that to our folks at what? National Marine Fisheries Service or Ecology?
Okay.
Right, Carolyn?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's one of the inputs to our
GMA
compliance.
And one of the inputs that we believe might need work in the future, I believe.
Yeah.
Is the vacant buildable lands model and the.
Yeah. It was definitely not really discussed.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Say may need work.
It appears under concurrency that you're following, just an observation for confirmation that you're following, when they read it in concurrency code, that you're now following what that code spells out. So
yes,
you're paralleling exactly what anybody has to do with regards to
yes. Yes. Changing our measurement methodologies and trying to be consistent with the other planning documents that are supposed to feed into the TIF.
You know, and prior to this, last year we ranked on the whole model of the LOS. So we got all of it. I think we need to update it. It needs to be updated and consistent with all of our documents.
So these are the first two aspects of concurrency. The other two parts that we look at to complete the concurrency thing, same things, but measured again in a slightly different area in a couple of cases. We take a look at would a project improve congestion in an area that's under moratorium? Does it actually improve the level of service or the volume, the capacity ratio? Is it helping anything? We take a look at urban holding areas as well. Would a potential project help alleviate congestion and issues within an urban holding area? These are the four things we look at under the umbrella of concurrency. Again, to help be better projects that are going to help keep our county moving.
One more question.
Sure.
On the moratorium area, is that, do you guys consider that a declared moratorium or a de facto
moratorium?
The definition that I have is where existing roads are deficient for current needs and the county board has officially halted new development until needs can be addressed. So that sounds like declared.
Clear.
That sounds like declared. So just one suggestion, de factos are pretty
well-known
and just may be worth some consideration.
I don't think there are any declared alternatives.
Correct right now, and there's my experience, other than Salmon Creek being done twice, I don't recall the last one in the county that we were maybe Mill Plain years ago. It's more of a, we, in practice, we hit them in a de facto sense.
Mm-hmm.
try to get ahead of that, resolving it, or get back.
Is there a moratorium on Fifth Plain Creek now, or is that a de facto moratorium?
There's no official moratorium.
So you could have something that's farther away or outside of an area, but then strips through this failing area that is kind of the bigger moratorium or halted development, but all you have to do is send some strips through the wrong place, and you could get stuck in that in a de facto kind of way. So, I don't know.
Anyway, I've noted that suggestion. I'll have a discussion with our concurrency experts, and you know, it seems very reasonable if we can come up with a consistent way to determine de facto. That seems very reasonable. Let's start addressing the problem before it becomes a
good question.
Jamie, wouldn't the de facto moratoriums play into project specific? Be more project specific?
No, the way. A large project can sort of tip the scale, and you kind of have the little ones that
can still
sweep by, but eventually you're going to hit that. And just what I've seen in practice is you can kind of get to that factor situation where nobody can go ahead. You know, the boards definitely don't like to declare the M word because it's a very big bad thing. And
yeah.
A lot of people.
So there's a way for them to determine if, in fact, is a particular area, corridor, intersection, whatever, may cause a defective one.
Correct.
Okay. So just in keeping with the theme of being as objective as possible.
I will talk to our concurrency.
I would think they could come up with something.
And see what their recommendations are for
a certain amount of trips that cause it to fail or whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. This is not a challenge, it's just a question. Not knowing why would congestion in the moratorium area yield to a 400 point, but transit station or urban pulling areas be able to be 6 points. Just from my understanding, would be common. One's an established development already, that's not. The other is a full size of B, to be able to develop what comes.
I think I would define them a little bit different as the urban holding happens when the land use is expanded. So they say, yeah, we'll expand it, but we're going to hold this area until more improvements are made. A moratorium, I think, in my experience, has been after the fact resulting. So development did happen, it kept going, and then the trips got locked up. That's not during the land use process or urban holding. Designated to the land use process. Maybe Marty can help me. I said that wrong, but I would think one is an after the fact, and one is land.
It's a fair question, and I'm not sure if this will help clarify or just add more information. I wondered about that myself, and the concurrency guidance of the also said the key difference between urban holding versus moratorium is that an urban holding area is an area where roads or other needed services do not exist, so we're holding off on allowing development. The key versus is in a moratorium area, the roads do not, roads in a moratorium area do exist, but they're insufficient for the need. In an urban holding area, they don't exist at all. It's a good point.
In a area under moratorium, you have all the other services there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. You know, for development, which you don't have to train out of work capacity.
Yeah, correct.
In the urban holding, it's a rural area. You don't. All you have is a rural network, but you typically don't have sewer,
true,
or maybe some other ancillary services. Not. I'm just wondering. It seems like I want to clear up the problem I have before I open up in the future. Another.
I see what you're saying. Maybe. Yeah. At a minimum, maybe we should have the same number of points since we're capping it at 10 anyway. I see the logic. If we already have a built-out area for the roads, it's a moratorium because the roads out there. Maybe we should be looking at that first before we start expanding into a new urban holding area.
Logically, from the
perspective.
Well, I'd say logically, and Jamie, I think it's an excellent question. Jamie,
that is an excellent
may
question.
Weigh in as well. But I mean, you know, under GMA, just if you look at the concept of GMA and, you know, growing from the inside out, you know, what basically what you're saying is, why aren't we giving more points or at least equal points to allowing the inside, but, you know, basically vacant, you know, which would be vacant buildable land, but for the lack of roads, road improvement or something else, it's just not being built. You know, Ott's question was basically why 6 points for something in urban holding where there's no services versus 1 point or what, you know, the lower points for something within a moratorium area or that is a de facto moratorium, but it's inside the growth boundary, has sewer, you know, has the services and everything else. It's a good question.
It is a good question. I could see perhaps just off the top of my head, it seems very fair in this room at this point to actually give the same 4 and 2 to moratorium area that we do for urban holding.
I think the one issue there would be sort of weeding. So really we only have one urban holding area left. Is that right, Marty?
There are a couple, but I mean
one's industrial ones. They have a few areas that are stuck right now.
So
I can see the three up top of my head.
Well, there's 179.
179.
Yeah. Is there any in Mill Creek area that's still?
No.
There's none in North Orchard.
There's some out by the sun.
North Orchard and then east.
Well, anything around the cities they're not annexed are in some form of urban holding.
But right. Those don't. And those are cities have to annex.
What is that?
Well, is that clarified in here? I mean, I don't know, but that's...
It's a huge point, I think, in terms of, like, looking at the casino and the impacts of the area between the center and Ridgefield and south. I mean, I think it's a ginormous question about those areas that are going to be rapidly developed once the casino is open. It's an interesting question. I mean, it really is. I mean, I think it's... That seems to kind of be a big issue about vacant buildable lands. I'm sure it did not recognize what the impacts are going to be from that development, just that one development along that corridor. I mean, Ridgefield's already seeing growth.
Yeah.
And those cities are not going to expand out to all that area in the county.
Yeah.
It's not in the urban growth boundary. So that's a huge thing.
Right. We're going to revisit that.
Absolutely. No, that's a very good point that came up.
Back to my point, though, I think the reason why, in my estimation, odd is because typically when you're in a de facto or a declared moratorium situation, it's usually focused on, you know, one or two intersections. In the case of an urban holding area, is that I'm most familiar with in the county, you're talking about potential for 2,000 acres that are really being hung up on one. Big fix project. So there may be some waiting there, recognizing that if you relieve that choke point, getting the county getting bigger than you thought.
It seems to me though that urban holding. I mean, there's a mega project or two, and then the fix for that mega project or two unlocks a lot of land for development. Moratorium is. Well, the most recent was Salmon Creek, but you also had the, you know, I-5, 205, not insignificant roadways, and a hospital in Washington State, and Walmart, and a whole. So that was a unique circumstance, but I think...
But yeah. We have to think, I mean, you also got to be looking at this long-term, if we're, you know, and going through another growth management where we're going to have more urban holding, and what do you want to serve first?
It really kind of was a 50-year plan.
Yeah.
Ultimately, and
right.
I know the challenge is there's already this court case, you know, this appeal of the GMA right now.
Right.
It doesn't help. That doesn't help at all.
No.
It doesn't help at all.
No.
You know.
Well, it's saying maybe that just to look at, and maybe we can hear about. I think it's a really valid question, and
it's
can be
a super valid question that actually we hadn't thought of, but it does make a good. It is definitely something we'll look into. And you're only going to get the points for within or adjacent. So actually, as it currently stands, you're going to get the 4 or the 2. But that is a good point. Why do we treat it differently? We will absolutely look into that. Thank you.
Yeah, we definitely need to revisit that, and that's why we're here today.
Yeah.
It gets your input.
Oh, that's great.
We didn't miss it. Okay, a couple other things that we look at from connectivity, and here again, kind of getting to the circulation and maybe tying on to what we were just talking about, how are we actually building out the whole road network? Are we collecting to arterials, collectors, both? Are we completing the gap? How are we facilitating circulation through an area that is considered. We look at multimodal features. We're supposed to be multimodal. Many grant programs that Public Works relies on to complete roads have a big multimodal component. And so when you take a look at what the county arterial atlas specifies for multimodal features, is the road supposed to have bike lanes, sidewalks? Does it improve access to some of these other things? And we award points for those items as well. Environmental is the second category that was basically completely blown up, and after talking to our environmental people this year, they had lots of really good suggestions. What they suggested was basically taking the 2 or 3 bullet points we previously had, and they actually signed up to rank all of our TIF projects on the 8 things you see down the left-hand column. How easy or difficult will it be to get to NEPA or SEPA? Are there big wetland permitting issues, etc.? And rank each project on each of those categories as either low or no problem, moderate problem or moderate expense, or a high concern, and award points as you see there, and then just total up the columns. So we'll be getting a lot more discrimination in terms of various environmental issues that could make a project easier to do or certainly more expensive. Both of those issues tie into what we can do. Funding leverage, we talked about how important grants are to us. We definitely take a look at funding leverage and what percentage of outside money, grants, regional funding, developer fees, etc., can be and have been committed to the project. About 50% of our transportation program, or $15 million a year, comes from these outside sources. So we definitely want to recognize the importance of those.
How do you apply the developer fees when you're looking at a project? How what geographic area or do you? Well, I said it's state, federal grants, regional developer fees, et cetera. I was kind of curious if you have a road project, how do you figure out the scope of the developer fees? Like,
I think it's developer agreements, actually.
Okay.
And typically, you have to be adjacent to the project.
Okay. That was my question, is whether, it opens it up.
Like, for example, 99 503, we have the Fountain Development. They got additional points because they participated in that project. And we were able to leverage those dollars against our grant funds and our private public share match with our companies. So that's really, it gets additional points for being able to leverage additional funds. So we thought we'd give fair points for state grants, federal grants, and other companies too. Not like green and state funds, whatever the case may be.
Okay, but not tip fees.
Correct.
Okay.
Because those are after the fact.
Right. Gotcha. That's perfect.
The environmental, like, that's kind of interesting because it's not really based on the need for the project. It's based on
For lack of a better term, the difficulty or the issues that might come into acquiring those permits or permissions. Let me see if I have an example.
I think it gets back to the cost benefit.
Yes.
In a roundabout way, it's a cost benefit. We can spend $100 million to do 100 foot across a really high level habitat, whatever.
You hit my comment exactly. Yeah. Because what I was saying is environmental is one piece, but it sounds like what you're really looking at is a cost benefit. That's exactly what I wrote. Because I kind of see things like right away. That's another big one. I mean, the same thing as environmental. So maybe environmental's change to, you know, cost and benefit. And then it actually maybe has a higher number than six, because the only thing that's anchored about the ones you have.
So are you saying keep it in the environmental area?
Well, I don't know that environmental impacts is one factor with cost and benefit.
Right away is a good example.
Yeah, right away is another one that equally is challenging in some of these projects. We spend a lot of time trying to get right away.
Yes, sir, we do. And that's why we touch on right away. I think that under, back under one of the first ones.
Yeah.
Or topography.
Yeah, topography. That's another good one. It is in there too?
No.
So there's
different places that
they can make sense. These categories are
called.
And this is just to be clear, I kind of skipped ahead, but this is more.
I think that's.
It's not the all-in.
Absolutely.
So we use this, and this is the order they're going to use. This is like one tool where you use the primary.
The ranking that comes out of this process is a starting point for the county determining which projects we're going to look at next in terms of moving our way toward the 28 capital facilities.
So we have about 28-35% and so we need some tool, some mechanism of what to build first. So this is a starting point, but oftentimes if you look at the evaluation, they're within. So if you find, so say if you have five projects and there's a grant potential, you know, of $5 million, $4 million, whatever it may be, I need to skip down to fund that project. And then once that project's funded, because we don't want to miss out on a funding opportunity, then once that project's funded, it may receive additional funds. And then once it reaches its 10% of construction, we actually move it into an obligated state. But we're not going to rank any more. Because if we keep re-ranking, we're never going to.
So I don't know if you heard, Jamie brought up another, and I don't, it may be covered earlier or may not, but you know, another cost benefit or something outside of environmental that affects it would be topography. You know, that.
And Jamie, why don't you elaborate on
you,
that?
Well, I'm just thinking of vertical curve issues, yeah, very high-ended expense. I don't know if
that
typically falls into
vertical curves and things like that are, and drop-offs at the side of the road are looked at as a safety measure. One possible challenge I can see with making it a more visible part of the ranking is we're not, typically at this level we have a roadway and we have a set of termini. We haven't really done any surveying, we haven't done any serious investigation into it. The purpose of the ranking is typically more which one do we next want to take that detailed look at. But there might be a way that we could look in more depth at that. But it's definitely one of the first things when we decide to move a project forward and start designing on it. You hit the nail on the head in terms of that being very key to the next parts of the project.
Yeah. And just from. There's maybe something you want to add here, and there's cost benefit. If an area is known to have those issues.
Well, and you have, I mean, your standards and all have max grades and things like that. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of steep area in the.
Well, in unincorporated urban county, there's going to be a lot of those.
179th,
well,
all the way to
219th. Okay. Did you have a question, Steve?
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I just had a quick comment. Well, construction and production of building, I've followed these presentations for years. One of the things that the
concept we're trying to push into county policies, this idea of parcelization. And right now we treat in residential regions, it doesn't show up as a big function in these discussions because the developers pay for the old roads and the stuff in their developments. But it seems to me that at some point, because of the housing crisis that we're in, the capacity crisis that we're in, that we ought to be giving some priority to large parcel residentially zoned land, because there's a vast difference between 10 2-acre parcels and 20-acre parcel in terms of all the scope of development that happens on those. And I guess just for transportation purposes, it would seem to me that these telephones that you utilize and they can go to the next one anywhere. Parcelization or lack thereof in the residential zone should be a pretty,
thank you.
One of the pretty clear things is that the production style departments.
So you're thinking that perhaps looking the same way we look at large 20 acres, say developing a ready parcel, maybe we should be looking at, say, parcels of that size in zoning residential as well.
If you got a 40 acre parcel that's not significantly environmentally constrained, I guarantee you that's going to develop years and years and years ahead of a cluster of parcelized 1970s model homes on them that still have appraisal value. And yet, in current county model, we treat that all, we lump it together and call it residential vacant or residential underutilized. Mm-hmm. And there are some acreage differentiations in there, but very, very much. They really don't speak to the actual economics of how residential property develops. And we really try and get those concepts built into the county planning process.
You do that for commercial and industrial right now, it seems reasonable that we should look at doing that for residential.
I think we're looking for how
much residential
load is. Okay, let's give a level of. Okay.
That's something we can look into. I made a note about large parts of residential. No, good point. So one more, unless there are any other questions or comments, there's one more tip area and Susan can wrap up. Yes.
I think it's the next slide.
Okay.
Yeah. It was kind of a segue on Steve's comment. I just it's the public and other support.
And that's the last one. Perfect.
So that's great. I'm just a question on the regional transportation modeling. Is that a finer cut than the vacant buildable lands modeling? And the differentiation, and this kind of gets back to perhaps Steve's comment, which I think there's some concern generally about the vacant buildable lands assumptions and reflecting kind of what the market trends are and then also like what is happening. So just your thoughts on the differentiation between the regional transportation model and the vacant buildable lands model. Are they theoretically the same or are they different?
I believe they
are. I think they are. Yeah.
Okay. They are. Yeah.
I believe they are. RTC's model is based on these transportation analysis zones and where what land is zoned where. And they're split across the metro area. When you're talking about the metropolitan transportation program, it's a different model.
And it would just be interesting if they, you know, if they're different, that kind of what's the end result in terms of like how that gets inputted? It'd be nice to see both in comparison, especially if the regional transportation model is more aggressive and more realistic. That's just a thought, you know. So that might be the bookends. That's the aggressive one, and vacant buildable lands is a lighter assumption in light of the projections on housing and the growth rate, which. At the time that was voted on, the growth rate wasn't great. It was horrible. We were in the middle of a recession. Now that's all changed. So
I know they're different. I just don't know on order of magnitude. Yeah. I mean, it's been a while since I remember what went into the RQC modeling.
I think it's more of a higher level.
It is a higher level. And it usually is more aggressive because they look at like our jobs target.
Yeah.
You know, which is usually aggressive.
Yeah.
they use on the great depth, the chunks of having different.
Right, and these TAZs.
Yes.
And I think in order to get that point under Region Transportation Council, I would want to look at their MTIP and see a particular project. And, you know, if the project we're looking at that doing is also listed in their plan, great. In terms of how their plan comes together, you know, definitely, I don't know, so I don't know if it's something you could do.
It sounds like additional application.
Yep.
I'm just, it's an important thing. I think it's always better to overestimate than to underestimate. And I think this county is really at the crosshairs of like just explosive growth. And having a level of service is important. It kind of feeds into the economic piece of this, which is, you know, we may have everything else going for us, but the differentiator may be that level of service is worse in Clark County than it is in the rest of the metro area. Right. So that there's some features here that I think are important, especially on the employment end.
Absolutely.
We think
we'll look at that.
Summary. Talk about the support of the long-range plan, the detailed criteria. Are there anything else that we're missing that you guys really need to validate or look into or reassess?
I think we chimed in when it was necessary.
Yeah, I think we don't have, we've lost our quorum, but I don't think you were looking for a vote anyway. You were just looking for input from us.
Just on the evaluation, potential points for the job, the assigned different evaluation. I'm just curious. We did, and the reason
that's a
fair one. I'm glad I looked into that. The answer for that one is again, it ties in exactly what the assumption were that we used.
Then it's back to
the land model. Back to the
whole
job. Where is that?
I was going to wait on
the
food
and all ways.
One big question.
It was typically lower.
One big question, okay.
There were a couple of board decisions. Okay, first off, the way those numbers were originally developed, according to the people in GIS that work on the plan, they actually took a look at issued building permits over a 5 or 6 year period to determine when we issued this permit, going down path a few years, how many jobs did that building permit actually trigger, and they came up with those numbers. And twice since the late 90s to early noughts, those assumptions have been supported, approved, blessed again by our county board. So we decided to use those again. So the TIP tracks as closely as possible with the other higher level planning documents. And I was actually surprised to hear that it actually was based off an analysis of actual building permits. Because I was wondering the same thing.
So, and this absolutely works. on the potential point ratings, the industrial jobs,
what's that?
9 jobs, this guy. The commercial jobs, 20 jobs,
yep.
But you give higher points for this plan, mm-hmm. gives more potential points to 9 jobs per acre than it does to 20 jobs per acre.
Yep.
I'm just curious about that.
No, and that's a good point. Maybe we look at playing with point values. We might want to keep the actual job per building.
I noticed that.
But the point values.
Marty.
Odd?
Yeah.
Mr. Gaither?
That's going to stick.
The assumption on the 9 and 20, the assumption of 9 jobs per acre on industrial is that you have 9 jobs that are paying higher wages than minimum wage. 20 jobs at commercial retail paying minimum wage, when you talk about an economic development impact, that's the difference.
I get it. Oh, and I thought the problem was they actually issued permits.
That's what I figured.
Analyzed building permits issued in 1999 and 2000. Those numbers first showed up in the 2002 Buildable Lands Report, and the board affirmed that for the 2000.
That's true, too. That's true, too.
So the
yeah, it's stopped.
If it changes, we're going to change it. Okay. So I wanted to make sure you guys understand that.
update our evaluation every year.
So I want to wait till I got a big question.
The wages.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, great presentation. It's really helpful to see this. And
what's it? Well, the
big question is on the capital side. And I guess what I'm curious about is the scope of this proposed TIP valuation system and in terms of the number of projects that people in that pipeline and the true dollar amounts in comparison to maybe the last 20 years of TIPS. And the reason why I'm asking is I think this kind of feeds back into the fee waiver question and other road funds and sources. I'd just be curious to see if we have a very severely declining revenue stream that's resulting in fewer projects getting put onto the TIP. Which is a concern to me. If we have all these big objectives and 29% are seeking economic development, or we have two pennies to boost up with, it doesn't help us out much.
There's a bunch of problems that are happening. The projects are, the cost of all the huge costs.
Yeah.
The grants will stay the same per se. We're getting $2 million max for some of these grants that are multi-million dollars. Homeless storm law, we haven't gotten that. Plus these big transportation packages. I think I talked to you guys about this last time I met with you. They're not there. The authorizations, the earmarks, but they're not there anymore. For example, 119, we didn't get a large funding package for that. 10th Avenue, no large funding package. Salmon Creek, about $27 million of federal funds. It's changing. And so that's one of the biggest problems that I've seen in the past, 8 to 9 years that I've worked on this program. So it's the projects that are increasing, it's the environmental, some of the environmental rates, and then it's the declining revenues. We're just not seeing them.
I think to the point, I think it's probably outside of this body's purview, but I think providing that data showing what historical TIPS have looked like and the investment that is being made by the public sector there and show that kind of on a declining curve basis, it might help the policymakers maybe their partnerships identify other solutions that maybe will hopefully increase the TIP number of programs.
One other thing we're facing is $3 million. So homeless and everything else on the top of that. That's the big thing that I see. That's a good suggestion.
I think, to Jamie's point, I think just real numbers about what it truly costs to do the road improvements.
Yeah.
But that's a huge issue, and not to underestimate that. That's it's important.
Thank you for your
input.
Thank you very much.
Horn's not here, so I think I just got to be
okay. Yeah, I see.
Thank you.
I hear he's leaving. Retiring? Thank you very much. Do we want to hear back on this at all, or just whenever? Just
this looks like it's a ranking thing. It's validation on the process in which they.
Yeah, so it's good.
I think it's about as
good to go.
As you're going to get. It parallels well with current code. I don't think that any exceptions to the suggestions that we have.
Yeah, I think they're good suggestions.
It's more refined.
Yeah. Good. All right.
I'm sure they'll come back with the actual tip.
Well, no, definitely.
That goes best.
Just wanted to make sure you guys didn't want to see a follow-up. All right, so Chris isn't here, so Steve, I guess, why don't you come up and tell us where you are on the bonding DA.
Right, and Kristen can chime in.
Yeah, we have a development agreement in place. We signed it. It's been blessed by engineering, by legal, by all the powers that be. It's going to be in front of the councilors on April the 18th. And really, that's, at the end of the day, it ended up, I think, being a pretty simple document. Some of the roadblocks in getting here were just sort of the things that the project team was talking about. We're going to be progressive and innovative. The county's going to have to increase its risk appetite a little bit. At least its perception of risk and how it deals with it. I saw that as quite an issue throughout this process. So, it seems like every time it got touched, it's like, wow, I'm not quite clear how this works. And so I'm going to take a really cautious approach. And unfortunately, that really cautious approach, I looked on my email file. The first time I sent this out to the dean was June 6th of last year. So that's a pretty long process for what I think ended up being a really simple problem. At the end of the day, I think the only challenge we have now is building. Department needs to figure out how they're going to handle, you know, a large volume of building permits all at once. But presumably, if we got resolved, the net effect is going to be that, you know, we develop a process that hopefully can bring product to market from, you know, preliminary application to occupancy permit. We work 6 months a year faster.
Steve, what were the differentiators in the development agreement? I mean, those highlighted nuggets.
Yeah, I didn't bring a copy with me because I'm not sure how public it is before it's public. I don't know how that works, so I wanted to kind of subscribe that part of the process. But really, all it does is it provides, and of course, the bonding for the plat recording has never been an issue. That's always been available,
right.
You know, to any development in the county. The issue is at what point in the process could you conceivably begin taking out building, residential building permits? And where we've come to is, everybody has different terminology for how they talk about, and I'm not in the trade, so it all sounds the same to me, but we're basically at a place where when you've got all your basic infrastructure in, your basic stormwater, basic sewer, not necessarily extensions, stuff that gets trenched and put in at the tail end of the project, not your final landscaping, but you've got your road base in, you've got your curbs in. That point is where we negotiate as the place in which residential individual lot construction.
So, Steve, does the agreement include those descriptors?
In other words, in our agreement, and that's why I can kind of see where some of these, it'll be interesting to see if this evolves into code or not, because, you know, every development project's a little different, but in our project, what we did, the way we approached it was, the development agreement provided for bonding the entire project, regardless of what we're going to do with building permits. And then within the development agreement, it said, okay, when these things are completed, you will be able to then begin applying for building permits for the entire plan.
And then when can you get CFO?
As soon as, just that doesn't change. It's going to be recording right now.
Oh, I see.
It records with the development.
We have language in the code about substantially complete, but not really well defined.
Okay.
And I think the development agreement defines substantially complete by like utilities, sewer, water. Stormwater is a big deal for us.
Yeah.
You all know that. We all know that. We live with it. I think it defines that a little bit better. And then it clarifies when, you know,
issuing building permits so construction can commence earlier than the thing has to be complete, that we would do the final inspection and the CFO when you have the subdivision last lift of asphalt, everything done, and then that's when you're, because they're going to be finishing that stuff up anyway.
And the way it looks is you've got a development agreement, and then attached to it is just, other than the legal description, is just the engineering cost breakdown. And there's a little asterisk to say these items are to be completed prior to issuance of building permits.
So we use the standard for the county provides for a bonded report. So that's it, the exhibit. And then the asterisks, these line items have to be completed before permits.
So the bonding, you said, I mean, the two big issues were, from the county standpoint, how big of a bond or the safety factor. So it's 150% on the entire project?
Yep.
On the entire project.
Even though so most of it's done. I mean, you got to realize we reduced the bond amount.
Okay, but that's right. But you back up and you're bonding 150% of the entire project. So that gives a fair amount of safety to the county.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then, in return, you're getting...
More than they have with just the development.
Well, no, exactly.
It's 150% of the remaining items of the project.
Oh, the remaining items.
That's what has already happened.
Okay, I thought you were backing up the entire... So it's 150% of the remaining items. Okay, I was going, wow.
You have to have the maintenance bond, obviously, in effect.
Right.
Well.
It's the remaining.
So okay. Remaining. Yeah, that makes sense.
So you're six months to a year on house construction, you're waiting to see that...
Correct. You definitely, the bond definitely save on the carry cost. There's no question about it.
And this project, we probably won't realize quite a lot of time savings, but we're hoping that
it could be others. Yeah.
That in your project.
But so the second question was, how many can you pull? It sounds like you're saying you're going to be able to pull the.
There's right now there's no limit envisioned. The procedural issue that we've got to work out is. What are we going to use, sort of like a same as process, or how? What process are we going to? I mean, how? And I agree that needs to be worked out. Is how light do these floor plans have to be
very
same as?
Well,
we have a meeting tomorrow.
We have a meeting tomorrow
with.
We will have.
I have a meeting with them tomorrow.
Well,
the other issue with the building permits is if we can't do a same as, if we can do a they're just issued via.
It's the mechanics of when the board approves the development agreement, they can go. We're having this meeting tomorrow about what does it mean.
So are they getting? They're not getting preferential treatment on building permits, or are they? Because that's something that.
No, Jeff.
No. This is something. Jamie and I sat in a room full of angry builders and developers the other day. One of the things was permit turnaround time. Someone said it's taking 4 weeks if it's not lean, or at least 4 weeks. There were several other issues. It was one of the most depressing BA meetings I've been to. So that's why I asked that question, because it's a very the mantra, the if I had to say it, to bring up what the concern was, is not only the amount of time, but a lot of these guys are saying, hey, we're bringing in the same floor plans, or pretty much the same floor plans, you know, can those same as, how do we define same as? So the builders outside this room are asking that same question. So I want to be careful how we define that.
It's a discussion I need to have with our building official. And
I think it's on our work plan too, actually. I think we discussed it in front of the counselors. So.
The answer to that though, Jeff, is that we just happen to be the builders and the developers of this project.
Right.
There's nothing that says a developer can't do the same project. So the idea is he's got his lots sold, and he may have them sold to several different builders.
Right,
right.
But so long as they meet the criteria for processing, remember, we're not getting preferential treatment. If we're building 60 houses that all look more or less the same, that's different than I'm building 60 custom homes and I want to get the same.
And that's the, but you're, no, we're all on the same page. That's the discussion. There are some builders, I'm not one, but there's some that, you know.
Okay,
yes,
so.
This process should work. The same for anybody that wants to go
the same as
the whole
or whatever.
The development.
Figure I'd bring it up.
I will sit in a room full of angry builders, and I will say that they've asked us to improve. We went through Lean.
Mm-hmm.
We were tweaking Lean within a few months. Aggravating to me. And we've tweaked it a couple more times.
Why is it aggravating to you?
If the same as program, if we get to that discussion and we think about it, if it turns out to be the same as Lean, I'm going to have a hard time with it.
What happened with Lean?
Can you make this exception? Can you make that exception? I missed this piece of paper, and I don't have this submittal. Here's the thing about Lean. There's a checklist. If we all agree what's on the checklist, it's an open book. Here's the answers to the checklist. So when I've had builders submit floor plans with garage door left and the truss package is garage door right, that's aggravating.
Yeah.
So I have said to builders and a couple of production builders is, if you can't spend 15 or 20 minutes of extra time on QA, QC to submit, is if you're saying that it's punitive, I guess it is punitive. Honestly.
No, I don't.
Honestly. I have sensitivity over this because we started. We started.
He never does.
No. We started Lean.
How you feel?
He's already fired.
We started Lean the month I hired Chuck Kreider in the Permit Center.
Yeah.
And we launched. I think we launched our program in, I want to say, May.
May of last year.
And No, it was before then.
Yeah. Well, we did the test run before.
Before then. Yeah. It was way before then. But it's like and now, building on tax lots is a different thing.
Yeah.
But we took Lean on, it's a subdivision lot with approved and improved stormwater systems.
Yeah.
It can't be that. It's not rocket surgery, as somebody would say.
No, I absolutely don't tell me.
He is worked up.
I missed. I must have. I guess I know who you're talking about, but I must have missed that quote.
No, so I'm.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I will be open to a discussion and a
couple
consideration. But the same as plan can't be what we've seen with Lean. I want to go back to the builders and the BIA we had at last. We have a roughly quarterly meeting, and we have a round table, and I said, Lean needs to be Lean.
Yeah, as a builder, I agree. If our guys can't...
And if you all can police that among yourselves, that'd be great.
No, if we can't, if we can't do, I mean, obviously, when you put a process like Lean in, or for what same as or whatever, there's going to be tweaks and things. And I know what the tweaks you're talking about. There's tweaks to the program. The tweaks you're talking about are people are trying to get outside the checklist and or whatever, or make mistakes. I agree. If someone can't take 15 minutes and they make a silly mistake or whatever, or if it keeps happening. I mean, mistakes happen, too.
Yes, they do.
Because we also heard about, some small stuff that gets really small stuff that could be corrected, like over the phone, things that the city of Vancouver does, all those things. At the next roundtable, maybe that'll all come out. I don't know.
Yes.
It was just it was Jamie's meeting, but I felt sorry for Jamie because it was...
Yes.
and there were other issues, too, but, most of which, a lot of them, on our work plan, but... But everyone's getting kind of fired up out there, not just you. Any other questions on that? I mean, Steve, sounds like you guys have, paved the way to see how it goes. And
we're going to all be downloading that once
we can. You ready to leave? Mr. Gaither? All right. Public comment. Any public comment? I do have one, and Dean's here. So I did contact Nick. I keep wanting to say Jeremy. Nick over at the PUD on the transformer issue. He's requested or suggested that we get together with them ahead of the deed meeting and have a separate meeting maybe to discuss it. I don't know if you know, Mike was saying, you know, he'd rather have some builders attend that meeting. I don't know if it's something.
It had been coming up. We had a couple of builders. We worked on some small lot subdivisions.
Yeah.
And Kurt calls me in the office and says, "Hey, Mike, have you heard about this? What are you talking about?" Well, Nick's saying that we can't build a building at the setback. It has to be further back because of the setback requirements. And I'm like, no, I haven't heard anything about it. Has it come to do? No, it hasn't. And maybe 3 or 4 weeks elapsed, and it's like, now it's suddenly a really big deal.
Here's all I'm suggesting. There would be some extra adhesives that we could employ with that particular builder and yourself.
Right.
That get this thing on.
And I asked Jeff, hey.
Go ahead.
I was saying, we talked a little bit about it before the meeting started.
Yeah.
Send that out. I'm not sure that I'm the best one to be there, but somebody that has an intimate knowledge of the impact and what, and the other part of it where it affects us is that PUD, it's my understanding, PUD would like us to place these setbacks on the plat. These setbacks around the transformers on the plat.
Yes.
That's way over top. I mean, we have building setbacks, one thing. We have PUDs, that's another thing. But I know that the surveyors in our office would have to take exceptions.
Well, the problem is to put it on the plat. You know, a developer may not necessarily know where to put the. It's like trying to locate a driveway potentially, especially when we're getting into that narrow window. It's hitting people. It's blindsiding people left and right. Jack?
Jack.
Yeah.
I agree. Now we've got an open door apparently, or listening ear.
Yes.
You just want to take advantage of it.
I do, and I do. I don't know whether we'll get anywhere. I don't, you know, we were talking about this. I don't, but we'll have to see. I mean, they're saying the IBC and other things
but
might.
It's causing, and Jack Green brought a great example. He's doing a commercial building downtown Vancouver, and their code requirements are built, you know, your facade basically, outside your building, your property line in this case, and now he's got to deal with this transformer issue.
Hit him, blindsided him.
So how do you, do it?
I get it. Been there.
So is this a transformer overhead or on the ground?
On the ground,
and they're
blocked. Green box.
10-foot arc, and I think basically what they're saying is the entire house is combustible. Basically, is what they're saying.
Prior to all this, party plant siding, which is the most popular used. Is considered by the IEC, and I have it from both Dave Merritt and from Jim Nero, it is considered non-combustible. In the code listings for setbacks for transformers, it says non-combustible. However, CPU is now indicating that party plant siding or any other cement fiber siding is no longer considered non-combustible. It's not combustible, but it's no longer considered non-combustible. So that's, then therein lies the issue.
And whether they're thinking that, you know, inside, you know, right behind the hardy plank is combustible. Yeah.
Our county council advisory board.
Yeah, I know. This is, I thought of this, yeah.
No, but we're also the development and engineering advisory board, and this is certainly
the
development
issue. Doing, not headed off into good things.
Well,
aren't pertinent to our charter.
And I was going to throw that out because I didn't know if we felt like it wasn't pertinent to the charter, then you know the BIA could potentially you know take it up with a bunch of builders. If we thought it was pertinent to the charter, then you know Deeb probably has a little more. You know, I mean. They might listen to Deeb a little bit more. I don't know whether that, you know, we're Clark County. They can do what they want, so they'll, you know.
No, I'd ask for a legal interpretation.
Okay.
I mean, if CPU is making some determination as to what, how something is defined and what it means, like, you know, the chief building official has the authority to interpret and administer the building, state building code. I don't see how CPU says, well, it's no longer a non-combustible material. I don't know what authority they have to say that.
Yes, they need to show, I don't know, you have this issue, that they should show something like ASTM's testing or UL testing or, you know, something that...
I think it's a legal issue.
Say they're basing it on.
So, my point was, what I was going to ask was, is one... Is it in the purview of DEEB and something we want to follow? And two, then my suggestion would be to grab a few of us and maybe a, you know, just a small subgroup and go out and meet with Jeremy and probably Jeremy's boss or whatever. If I tell him, okay, we're going to have a subgroup from DEEB come out and talk to you prior to, or set up a meeting prior to, you know, the DEEB meeting if that works.
I think it's an element of any land use review, which is the purview of the county.
So the county doesn't review PUD plans,
but if they have to tweak, you know, site plans or subdivision,
it has to go on a plat.
Yeah.
And putting it on the plat, yeah.
I think, and by law, RCWP is the thing.
No, I'm totally on board with what I think needs to be done.
Yeah.
With the consensus in the room, I'm just not sure the need is the proper mechanism to do it. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
And it might not ultimately be, but this is at least a good starting point.
If I may, just met with a group of utility members from our community a month or so ago, specifically to address joint trench work within private development. Obviously, with a lot of the new stormwater issues we have to deal with, new DMPs that are being thrust upon us, the timing in which they come in, the manner in which some of this joint trench work takes place was kind of a large concern for us in getting the development to move through, us being compliant with state code, that type of thing, getting to work with contractors and developers and make this work for everybody. So I brought these people together and explained to them kind of where we were, what we were working towards, some of the things that have been discussed in this room relative to, you know, placement of topsoil, for instance, and getting that all bought off potentially before the joint trench even goes in.
Perfect.
So, and if that's the case, that, you know, that's problematic for that whole process. So I've explained to them a lot of the conversations that have taken place here and kind of what we need to do to work with them and for them to work together to narrow their joint trench timeframes down. Northwest Natural is a big issue in that whole process, yeah. And we will have representation at the next BD meeting from Northwest Natural, and they have committed to having someone at the BD meeting more regularly just to kind of help address issues that are going on with the development process. I'm not sure who that's going to be yet, but they committed to that more long-term. What came out of our meeting was a lot of concern on the parts of the utilities, PUD Electric, Northwest Natural, Comcast, Quest, Central, excuse me. A lot of concern, you know, obviously we're doing as much as we can with as little amount of property as we can, tightens things down for everybody. Their joint trench concerns, placements of transformers, you know, you've got 10 foot between lots if we're lucky.
Right.
Right. If you have an attached sidewalk and you have 10 foot between the lots for your driveways, on some roads you can't meet ADA for your driveways without doing something crazy with your curb.
That's what it
does. Right. So, I mean, but the point is, it's just everything's really tight and it's getting tighter. Yeah. They have tremendous concern over the amount of room that they have from the property line to the house and how that joint trench is working. And them actually getting the space that is required for them, the space of separation, and it's not there anymore. And they're having a lot of difficulty getting that. So this transformer thing in itself with that one particular project, that is, that's kind of a, I don't know, I'm not privy to that information. They can bring that up. But a lot of us, we're coming forward with next month, is relative to the concerns and issues that they have with the building process and development, ensuring that they have the space that they need to be able to do the work that,
so it sounds to me, I mean, you kind of made the, to me it sounds like it isn't our purview. If this much work is going on and jointly between the county and all to try to figure it out, that it would be in our purview. I just want to put it into someone's, because I know it's blindsiding a lot of people, and
sure,
it's only going to get worse because smaller, more lots and smaller lots are coming on the market like
that's
crazy.
Specifically why I suggested that this might be a good form, because a lot of the things that come forward in an effort to address the requirements that are being placed upon the developments, it's impacting them as well. And we're working here to try to figure out how we can best manage that through the development and building process. Not only does it impact the homeowners, but it's impacting the utilities as well, and not always in a positive way. And
yeah.
they would like a forum to be able to get their concerns heard as well. So if we're making suggestions towards changing county policy that impacts the building process, it's also impacting them. And that needs to kind of be taken into account.
Well, we have somebody from Clark Regional.
What's that?
We have somebody from Clark Regional.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
And so
that's a very good point. I think it is.
I'm good there. That they do the same thing at the FDA.
I still say it rolls back because we have kind of a parallel issue related to the smaller and smaller the lots go. There's no place for parking because you can't even park between driveways anymore. And so there's all kinds of other things that
those
it all leads
to.
It's better than it was for a little while.
Right.
I'll give you that. But we still have issues. And so it does go back to the planning and lot size and all that stuff. Just also go back around to having the right space to do the right stuff and stay compliant.
Okay. All in an effort to provide affordable
So we don't have, what I'd like to do, I guess, is just, if this group is okay, we don't have a quorum, but it is, should we meet ahead of time rather than, you know, talk to them about it during deep time?
Nick, if it sounds like
what he suggested.
In advance, that's fine.
Okay.
Let us know.
And can I seek some volunteers?
When that might happen.
Yes. I can get some schedule. We don't have obviously all the people in here that would volunteer, but it'd be great to have.
I'm thinking that if we knew.
Would you?
Early enough in advance.
Good, because it sounds like we're legal.
Builders in with that meeting. We could just probably facilitate it.
Yeah.
At our office. What I don't. I want to be able to have that discussion when and if he ever comes to. Is he going to be part of that? Your party presentation?
Yes. I'm working to assist them to get them here. I'm meeting with them Tuesday of next week.
Okay.
Out of operations, in an effort to kind of get them all on the same page so that they can come together. It's their presentation. I invited them to the meeting basically to present to you guys what their issues are.
Right.
That as we move through the government process, and then we're trying to keep county code and county policy in an effort to provide, you know, streamlined development, that kind of stuff, shrink lots, do these things. Their issues have to be heard and also county.
Okay. Do you have any?
No, in light of that information.
Yeah.
This is the form.
Is that? And Marty also pointed out we actually have Clark Regional Wastewater on our board or on the Undeed.
We can look.
Do you want to volunteer? It's one. It should only be one meeting, but
volunteer to do what?
To be in that meeting and provide some expertise as a builder. No, with the PUD and the proximity of transformers and all. Or do you not deal with that much anymore?
Is it a multi-family project?
You're dealing with it then.
It is a significant design issue.
This impacts
design.
This rule that they're.
It's a big.
So would you be willing to come and talk about why and?
Yes.
Okay, I know you're on a lot of.
Well, here's, on my mind's already made up. I don't need to hear a presentation.
And
I know what the issues are, and in my opinion, the PUD needs to understand what the current demands are.
And I don't think.
For affordable housing.
And I don't think they do.
We all can't have everything we want, in my opinion. And they don't see it that way. So. I would just say hire an attorney.
But specifically, this is specific to single-family residential, not multi-family residential. Even though it's still an issue for you, multi-family residential, this is coming up and without any PR whatsoever. I mean, it is like you're in for your building permit.
No, it's
and it's like, oh well.
Yes, I'll go.
Okay, that'd be great, and you're very right. No, people got, and then, you know, I'll ask in this group, or maybe maybe just grab someone like Jack too, or something.
I was just gonna think let's bring Jack because he's.
You know, we don't want to. We don't need to over.
We don't need to. But he's a very good example.
Good. Very good.
You know.
And we might be able. I'll talk to talk to our office, see who it might be, the builders.
Yeah, whoever.
And I can't remember.
Yeah, because whoever, yeah, because they're kind of the first ones to trigger it. Although at the BIA, several people, Jack, I think, and then someone else got hit with it too, though. I can't remember what. So perfect.
The number though of us there to a minimum.
Yes. No, I think if we get Jack, and if your builder, whoever got tripped up, that would be great. And Scott would be great because he's got
just send out a reminder.
Odd builds everything, so he's got all the expertise. Mr. Gaither. All right. Any other comments? All right, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Sorry, I thought that was okay. Tried to get you out earlier. That was good. Good discussion.